Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Thursday, September 22nd. We're back with you.
Yeah, we are.
We've got nothing better to do in the morning.
That's right.
So we're here to entertain, keep you happy, and hopefully, just hopefully make you laugh a little bit
yes.
in the morning.
Yes. Actually, I don't think I do have anything better to do.
That's true, right?
I always tell myself I'm going to wake up. Yeah, me too. Right. But I always tell myself I'm going to wake up, do some yoga. And then it's just me like being anxious about the day for a couple hours. So this is way better.
Yeah, there you go, you know. And yeah, like yesterday, we didn't have a show. And
you just sleep.
I slept a little more, but still I had things to do at 11. But for the most part, yeah, that's what I do. So I got to have something in the morning.
There
you go.
Otherwise,
man, I sleep in, you know. Like on Sunday, my God, till 11, 12,
In college, it could go to 2 or 3.
Yeah, if I go past 12, I feel like the whole day passed me by. Even though at 12, it feels like that too,
yeah.
You know. But
I love sleeping.
Yeah. But I love getting up early, let me tell you. I mean, it's hard, but when I have to, it's great.
Everyone always tells me, oh my gosh, the sunrise is
cool.
I don't care.
Right.
I want a sunset. I don't want a sunrise. Because I'm always a little bit, you know how you have to get up early in the morning to go to an airplane or something, like 4 in the morning? I'm always nauseous.
Really?
And I'm like, no one should be awake at anything with 4. It's too early and late at the same time.
It's in the middle of the night.
I like a sunset. I'm not a morning person at all. No.
Yeah. Mm-mm. See, I always have been, but since I've been running the station, I work really late.
Yeah.
You know, like till 2-3 o'clock in the morning.
Boy,
so then, so I can't get up at 6.
No.
Although I would love to. So so we skipped the show yesterday, and then you had a performance last night at the Comedy Store.
I was there,
and I missed it.
Yes.
Silly me.
It's okay.
But I already apologized.
Yes, we've already gone through this. He paid me $20. We're good.
No, exactly. To make up for the ticket I didn't buy.
No, but
that is the thing. When I go to these things, I usually leave 70, 80 bucks worth of food.
And so do I, which is terrible.
Two,
and
know?
Like, yeah, absolutely. And they have a really good patio bar at the Comedy Store. If you don't know, there's like the belly room, the original room, the main room, and then a patio where you can drink and
nice.
And smoke. So it's like very cool. And like Joe Rogan was there, and like Judd Apatow was there. And you see some big Chris Rock was there yesterday. So it's like, it's kind of a cool, that patio is a really neat place to meet people.
Wow.
Yeah, even if you never even go into a room, just that bar is a cool bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, they'll show me, man.
Yeah.
another missed opportunity.
And a lot of hot women.
I'm sure. You see, you didn't have to tell me.
That's right.
There's no place you go in LA without hot women.
And it was all women. The whole thing is called Pretty Funny Women. Uh-huh. And it's by my teacher, Lisa Sunstedt. And I took her class, and she does a show at the Comedy Store. And she rotates, and she asked for me to be on. And it was like all these hot women who are also very funny. And it's like such a cool group of chicks.
Yeah, nice. So it was more women than men in the audience?
No, it's generally more male-oriented. Comedy's always been more penises,
right.
Like, I'm always the only girl on a stand-up lineup. Usually.
Wow. Because there seem to be a lot of female comedians.
Well, they're hitting it big. You're hearing of them more.
Right.
Like, you hear Schumer and all that stuff. But I think, you know, when I go out, a majority is, you know, got all guys, and then it's me.
Right.
So to have all women is so awesome. But there was a lot of dudes in the audience.
Really? Is there like competition between the women?
In the least.
Really?
It's the coolest thing ever.
Really?
Everyone's very, which is weird. But there is, everyone was kind. We all sat in the audience for the others. We laughed. We shared jokes. We took pictures. It's a common, you have to be a weirdo to be a stand-up. But you also have to be pretty sensitive. So I think the women there, it's like curated, really cool women.
Really?
And there was a girl who was at the table next to my husband, and she went after me and said, you were great. And then her phone died, and she came over because she was alone. She had gotten stood up, which sucks, and I got her an Uber. So always be looking out for someone else, dudes.
There you go. You say you got her an Uber.
Yeah.
There you go. You should have given her my phone number.
Yeah, but her phone was dead.
Okay.
I was like, what, is she going to smoke signal home? How is she going to get home? And then I didn't even think of a cab. I was like, what's that?
Yeah, exactly. Who thinks of cabs,
no,
right?
No.
Yeah, they've got it tough now, I'm telling you.
I don't care. Uber's.
I know, and nobody cares because nobody liked taxi.
It was very awkward. I'd always say, can I pay with a credit card? You don't have cash? No. And I always feel terrible and weird with myself.
I know. I haven't taken a taxi cab in a long time. No. I think the last one was it may have been in Vegas or something when I just, from the airport to the strip or something.
Yeah, it's always the airport ones, yeah.
Yeah. But at any rate, in a few minutes, we have a great guest in the studio.
Ooh, yes.
You know, we thought we had an Indiana Jones here last week,
I was just
week,
thinking
right?
that. This is Indiana Jones.
Well, we have an actual Indiana Jones in the studio. And
Harrison Ford is here with us today.
Yes. No. But just as good. Just as good.
Just as good.
It's going to be very interesting and fun. And so now how long was your set?
6 minutes.
6 minutes.
Every girl
so that's
gets six
not
minutes.
Too bad, right?
So, I mean, yeah, you think that's, it's a perfect amount. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really good amount. And then we didn't have a host, so you just tag team. What you do is, so you say, I introduce the one right after me.
Right.
So it was just very, and what's interesting about it is she makes us all wear dresses. And I don't know how I feel. You know me. I'm kind of a feminist. So I don't really love the feminist. But it does sort of give you a more feminine, flirty vibe.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that is what the statement is.
Right.
So it's cool. I mean, it's cool. But
no,
it's,
it is. I mean, they got
I would never wear
me.
A dress, though, usually.
No, huh?
The more dressed up, the more you look dumb on stand-up. You got to be cash.
Oh, in stand-up.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So
that's
she makes
true,
us wear dresses
right?
doing stand-up, and it's a little weird.
Yeah, but do they have to be fancy dresses?
No, and I wear like a shmata of a tube top so I can like do my thing. Some girl was an ex-stripper, though, and she was... Oh, a little black dress up to her navel. Every guy. I was like, great.
Yeah, I'm sure she wins in a competition.
God dang.
Nobody listens to the jokes.
Nobody heard a word she said. And my husband was like, she just got up there and wow. And I'm like, all right. She was hot, though.
Yeah.
Rachel, you did well. Very well built.
Very cool. And so how many were there all together?
So probably, I think there was like 13
comedians?
Yeah, I think something like that. And my teacher goes at the end. She always slays and kills it. But yeah, it's just a lot of fun and a lot of different folks. And then afterwards, when you leave, you get to be in the audience and people come up to you. It's like when I'm always wanting to be more famous.
Yeah.
And it's the only time
and
I can feel.
And you love the attention.
And I love it. And it's the only time
right.
I can really feel it. So people come right up. Oh, and they're all drunk.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you were hilarious. Come here. And it's like, yay!
You know, if you love attention, there's always the option of porn, you know.
I mean,
you're
going to
get a laugh.
Hell no.
But I'm just telling you, I mean, people want
hell
to
hell no.
I don't think you in a million years.
I don't need that type of attention.
Exactly.
No. Ever. Not that I poo-poo it. I think it's fantastic.
It's really a fleeting attention, though.
I mean,
once they're gone, man, that's
right.
it, you know?
I'd rather have attention for, like, and not that porn isn't a talent, but something
is,
for, like,
yeah.
specifically a talented thing.
Exactly. Something you worked hard for.
Yeah, creative. Yeah. Not that porn's not creative.
Well, they call it all kinds of things,
sure.
you know, but, yeah. So, anyway, one more thing I wanted to bring up is, I guess this thing, like, okay, controversy doesn't stop, okay, in the name of political correctness, and I have to bring this up.
Okay.
Now, Disney halts the sales of Moana costume after racism claims. Now, Moana is coming up in a movie that Disney has made about an islander.
Okay.
And she's a girl.
Okay.
And the costume apparently has, like, tattoos all over the body.
Right.
And, like, a little dress made of leaves and stuff.
Okay.
Okay. So,
is this a traditional garb for this islander?
Well, the thing is, it's not a garb because, well, for a kid, it's actually an entire costume.
I see.
But it's supposed to reflect, nudity.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Oh,
but,
I see.
Yeah, when the body is tattooed when you're nude.
I see.
But I don't know that they refer to the nudity. What they refer to, I think, is those tattoos have deep meaning in the Polynesian culture.
Oh.
So maybe they're just saying, oh, you guys are just trivializing it.
Yeah.
Or
I mean,
right?
I have to be honest. Stuff like this does get a little PC to me.
Yeah.
I feel you. And you know me. Mm-hmm. I'm a bleeding heart liberal. But
yes.
I do understand the fed upness with this type of thing.
Yeah. I mean, what? Everything is racist
right.
now?
I mean, know.
People are looking for
Trust
it.
Trust me. And as a stand-up, you understand. I mean, I totally get it. Like, I'm not, the PC, you can't be PC when you're... A comic.
Comedian,
you can't unless
right.
you're terribly unfunny. I mean, really, very unfunny.
Yeah.
But, but maybe it was something, you know, bad. Did you see the thing like in Homeland, where they had the graffiti. You know Homeland, that show on HBO?
I've heard of it,
yeah,
but I've never seen
Apparently, they were putting Arabic in the background on, like, graffiti, as if it was she was in, you know, an Arab country. But it spelled out something. The guy writing, he was like, this is a crappy TV show. I mean, it was, like, ridiculous. So I think that's funny, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. That's let Disney be Disney. Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
Just let it
be. Exactly. Don't you think that Disney, of all people, actually sit down and think about these things?
Yeah, Disney, you have to.
Yeah.
And I think that the fact is they weren't showing enough women or women of color, like for a girl who's of color to see herself as a princess or on the Disney screen.
Right.
So things changed. So they got very diverse.
Exactly. But people still look for problems.
Always.
All right. Well, anyway, enough of that.
Ew.
All right. Well, we're going to get to our guest right now.
Yeah.
We're joined by Mr. Rick Avery. Welcome to the show, Rick.
Thank you, and I hate to bring the energy level down. Wow. Do you know, listening to you guys talk about sleeping in, and I love my beautiful wife, Donna, but since we've been together, there is no sleeping in.
No sleeping in.
It's against
in,
the rules. We get up at 5. She's up at 3 or 4 in the morning.
No, no. That's
but,
sick.
But
that's
it's, sick. The, it's so productive, though, right?
What is she doing?
Extremely
so much.
Productive.
What's she doing at 3?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah. What's she doing?
I'm about to install cameras to really find out, because she says she's working, but who does that?
That's amazing. If she does, power to you. I don't have the capability.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think just standing up and doing what you're doing is amazing.
Yeah, that's
stand
awesome.
Up. Yeah, it is. That's true.
It is. It's not easy. I don't think I could ever do that. I mean, I did do that to my friend. Like in front of my friends when I was like 13, 14, I felt confident to do that.
Of course.
Know, I was doing sketches of comedians and stuff. And but today, I don't think I could do it, you know. I would probably forget everything. And
It's a very, the moments before you go on stage, I know this is not true, but it's almost what an astronaut feels like right before they go to the moon, because it's a lot of oof, like terror.
Yeah. And that's the funny thing, though, is that look how... the stir is compared to what Rick does.
I know.
Okay? Now, Rick teases death every day of his life. And I've known you as an actor and stuntman, but you do a lot of other things, too.
Yes, that's the...
You do a lot of things. Everything that risks your life, you do, right?
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Yeah,
love it. Love it.
Yeah,
I have this new book that just came out. It's called The Life at Risk.
The cover's really cool. He's on fire walking with this badass look on his face.
Yeah. And this is a scene that they actually did CGI in Terminator 2.
Damn.
But that was a CGI. Here you're actually person coming out with a
fire.
On fire.
Yeah.
On fire.
There's definitely something wrong with me.
Like,
absolutely. But I think the book is more about not having limits in life.
Mm.
I've just taken it to an extreme by taking up new hobbies and then taking them as far as I could go.
Wow. And that's amazing, you know, because, I mean, it takes a very unique, special person to be able to live that kind of life. Let's
very
go back
disciplined.
To, yeah.
Yes, very disciplined.
So let's go back a little bit. When did you become interested in, like, extreme things and stuff?
Do you know, I don't think it was until later in life that I did that. And I did it unconsciously. They've identified what's called the risk gene. That's actually what it's
called. I just read
about
this. Wow. You need actual adrenaline. These types of people, you need it. The adrenaline rush for your genetics.
Yeah, wow. And it's both a curse and a blessing, because the curse is that you put yourself in these positions. Mm-hmm. The blessing is that the rewards are phenomenal. Phenomenal when you get them. So I don't think I got into it until I became an adult. I went into the Army. I got drafted. I came out. I wanted to be a stuntman. I had done some drag racing and that kind of thing when I was very young. And I was very unsuccessful in becoming a stuntman. So I decided, well, if I can't do that, why don't I become a policeman? So I tried out with 400 other guys for four slots that they had. And unexpectedly was chosen. Yeah, I really conned those guys, didn't I? Yeah, so I became a police officer, and then I had been one for quite a while when one rainy night, and this is in the book, one rainy night, I get a call and says, a car has been vandalized, go to such and such address. So I go to the address, the car is not there, it's a white Jaguar. And so I go and the guy on the radio says, call the station. Well, this is before cell phones, right? This
right.
is get a dime out, call the station.
A dime.
A dime, right? Put it in. I call him up, and Officer Fertilla says, "Oh, no, no, you don't understand. The car is owned by John Travolta." So I said, "Oh, my God, this is this is before Urban Cast. Saturday Night Fever. He's the biggest star in the
of
world."
Course. Yeah.
And so I go out, and I start searching for Mr. Travolta, and I can't find him. So for some reason, as life has it, I made a right turn onto the main street. I pull up to the red light, and lo and behold, what pulls up next to me on the left? But Mr. Travolta.
Whoa.
So I pull him over, and we get out, and we start talking. And I said, "Well, what happened?" He said, "Well, a fan jumped on the car, and he kind of bent the windshield wipers. What should I do in the future to keep that from happening?" I said, "Well, John, is this large man with you, is that your bodyguard?" He said, "Oh, no, that's just my friend." I said, "Well, maybe you should travel with someone."
Yeah, right.
You know, and so he said, "Well, can you recommend anybody?" Your listeners can't see, but there's a big, you know, Mad Magazine smile on my face. I said, "Sure, I can recommend. Here's my card."
That's exactly right. And that's how you do it, people.
Yeah, so I gave him my card, and he said, "Send me your resume." Guys, I hate to admit it, I never made a resume. I didn't know what a resume was.
Yeah, you're an action guy.
Yeah, what? I'm a dumb cop who, you know. So I sent him my resume. It took a year because his mother and his girlfriend died that year. Right. So I didn't hear from him. But a year later, his attorney calls me. And I became, I was in charge of his security for a number of years. And then he finds out one night, because I'm watching with the housekeeper, I'm watching Hal Needham do a stunt. Mm. Uh-huh. And I said, "Yeah, wow, that's what I've been wanting to do my whole life." Well, she tells John about this.
Wow.
The next night, John and I go for a walk after he has dinner. And I remember he had a cigar in his hand, and he said, "You know, you remind me a lot of my father. You look just like my father." Now, John was thin then.
Yeah.
I'm shorter than he is.
Yeah.
But he said, "I want you to be my stunt double from now on. I don't like you being a cop. I think it's dangerous." So he's going to make me a stuntman.
Wow.
So with a cigar in his mouth.
Yeah.
What a story.
Yeah,
so,
and to be discovered by John Travolta.
Yeah.
People, like,
taking a walk
people.
With a cigar.
What
like,
a
that's
story.
So Hollywood.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, I get a phone call, and it's the producer for his next movie in Philadelphia. And they said, "We understand you're John's stunt double." And I almost choked. And I said, yeah. And he said, "Well, we need you in Philadelphia. Can you come out?" And I said, "For how long?" Now, I'm still a policeman, and I still own two karate schools. So it's not like just take off. And I said, "Well, when do you need me for and how long?" And they said, "This weekend for 3 months."
Oh, my.
So I had to call the department, and I said, "Can I get a leave of absence?" And they said, "No, we don't give that. But I tell you what, paperwork-wise, quit, and then we'll hire you back when you come back."
Okay.
Oh, I went, "Oh, my God, this is great." So I did, and I came back, and I didn't join back up because life was great. And
why would you?
I went on
That's
to
fantastic.
Bigger and better things.
That's amazing. For those of you just joining us, we're talking to Rick Avery. And just for trivia, Rick used to have a radio show on LA Talk Radio with your sons. It was Brian and Mikey. And Mikey. And
my producer was my future wife, Donna.
Yes, Donna, there you go.
I love her.
And she's an amazing woman, too. And we loved having you and stuff. And you guys would interview stunt people and actors and directors and so forth. So... But let's come back to that. Let's find out a little bit about you so people will really want to read the book and everything. And so when you joined the police force, was that here in L.A.?
No, it was in Santa Barbara.
Oh, in Santa Barbara.
Yeah, everyone thinks there's no crime in Santa Barbara.
I was just thinking, what are they, stealing wine barrels?
Yeah, they still need cops there, though.
Yeah, no, we actually did have our amount of crime back then.
Yeah.
Not now. Santa Barbara's pretty clean. As a matter of fact, one of my former black belts who I trained is a captain up there. And he says, "No, Rick, we got it pretty much cleaned up." And then he gave me all his phone numbers in case I get in trouble. He said, "As long as you don't commit a felony, call me and
you're
I'll
fine."
Yeah, that's cool. So so Rick wrote a book called A Life at Risk. And I'm sure you'll want to get the book by the end of this interview, because Rick is a fascinating man, and we're going to find out more. Now, where did you grow up, Rick?
I grew up in New York City.
Oh, so you're from New York.
You could tell. He got a little accent.
Still there.
What part of the city were you?
In the Bronx.
Yeah.
In the Bronx?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
New York.
You could tell a Bronx.
Was it a tough area back then?
You know, it was surrounded by tough area.
Really?
Yeah, and I I would love to brag and say, yeah, I came from a tough neighborhood, but I didn't. And I was a skinny little boy, which is part of the book. I was very skinny. I was very awkward when I was young, and I had to develop from there.
Yeah.
Interesting. Isn't it always interesting? Our favorite guest had to had a big obstacle, came over it, and then like flew to success.
There you go. Those are the stories that make it, you know, in movies and in novels and stuff. That's pretty much how it is. You make progress. You go through a journey, and you transform yourself, you know.
That's absolutely right.
So growing up, do you have any siblings?
I do. I have, one of my sisters passed away a number of years ago. She was a twin, but I have a sister and a brother.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm the oldest.
Yeah. So what was it like with the twin? So you weren't the oldest always.
Yeah, I guess
well,
I was.
Because you had to share it with
the
other person.
Yeah, yeah. No, my childhood was great. Growing up in New York City where I grew up in the time I grew up was, I wouldn't trade for the world.
Really?
I know people have the same feelings about growing up on a farm in the Midwest, but where I grew up was fantastic, you know.
That's cool. And you had a good childhood then.
I had a wonderful childhood. We played stoop ball and mush ball and, you know, all of those games that people play in the inner city, and there is a feeling of camaraderie between neighbors that you really don't get here in L.A. You really don't know who your neighbor is, basically.
Oh, my God. I live in a one house with a fourplex. I don't know the names of anyone else.
Really, well, right?
And we're in the same house, basically. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah, and you would walk to everything. And I remember I was 8 years old. My dad used to send me up to Nat's Delicatessen, bring me back a six-pack of beer.
Wow.
Nat would pack it up for this little 8-year-old who would awkwardly carry it down 2 blocks to Dad. And the cops didn't care back then. You know, it was a different time.
Yeah. So what years were those? I mean, you know, I'm really curious because I'm trying to picture the time.
Yeah,
know,
we're talking about the 50s.
The 50s.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So when you were drafted...
That's what I was picturing.
So you were drafted later on. Was that to Vietnam then?
It was during the Vietnam War. Fortunately, I didn't go there. I went to Europe instead.
Oh, okay.
But for a 20-year-old to get plucked out of, you know, his nest, and I'd always kind of been a mama's boy, it was
tough,
nightmare for me.
Yeah, wow.
Just getting into the service and getting your head shaved and being screamed at, but they do turn you into something that sticks with you for the rest of your life. So
they really do. And how long did you serve?
I served for 2 years.
2 years?
Yeah.
Wow. You see, that's the thing is that I know with military, because, you know, coming from Israel and everything, everybody goes to the army.
Yeah, I don't think people know that, guys. It's women and men, am I right?
Yes.
Or it's mandatory to go into the army.
You have to. And if you don't go, if you sort of like get out of it, you're never going to get a job in Israel, you know, because people expect that, you know. It's sort of like I'm not part of the game if you don't go.
Yeah. So, but you get to wear a gun in Israel if you're a waiter. I directed a movie in Israel, and I went to an Italian restaurant, and the guy had his 45
on.
Oh,
that's possible. Yeah,
so
possible.
I guess if you're active military, maybe you get to
probably
wear,
yeah.
I don't know.
All I can tell you is that even the girls, the female, I mean, there are girls 18, 19 years old, and when they go on leave, they take their guns with them. They're you know.
Bad
M15, M16s and stuff, you know, whatever they used to.
I'm taking my lipstick in a flask.
Yeah.
That's what I'm taking.
Yeah, right? So, and they walk around not camouflage, but in uniforms.
Yeah,
and like
carrying
that,
the guns. And some of those girls are small.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
and
it's bigger
little.
Than they are.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
But you don't want to mess with them.
No.
Right,
what was that first movie, what was the first movie with Travolta that you were
Blowout.
Saw? Okay.
Oh, wow. I remember that movie.
I know. I want to hear more about
the movies.
That was
the De Palma movie, right? De Palma?
Brian De Palma.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
Good for you, Sam.
Yeah, I remember because I also read the book before I saw that. It was like a tie-in, and I liked it so much. I said, let me read the book first and then see the movie.
Yeah.
So, but that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the first with John. I worked with John for about 10 years. I eventually became a stunt coordinator for him. And
did you do anything on Face Off?
No. I had left him by then.
Oh, because that was later. You're right.
Yeah, it's funny because John had a really slow time after I'd
That's
been with
right.
him for a while.
Look Who's Talking and that.
Yeah, we did Look Who's Talking 1, Look Who's Talking 2, and we Chains of Gold and a lot of movies that you probably never heard of.
Right. And then Pulp Fiction.
Yes,
yeah,
right.
And that's when I got a call. Now, John, at the time, you know, he's a big pilot, and he was planning on being a commercial pilot and giving up acting entirely when he got the call Pulp Fiction.
It changed everything.
Yeah. And wow. Meanwhile, my career is taking off, and I got the call to come. Well, I understand you, John Travolta. Yeah. And we got a little crash for you to do. They gave me a date, and I said, okay, I can do that. And then I was doing Beverly Hills Cop 2, and I was the stunt coordinator. And when they changed the date, I couldn't do it. And that was the end of my career with John. Never got called again.
Really?
I think he took it a little personally. It's funny because I now double Robert De Niro.
I've
been doing that for a number of years, and he's a wonderful man. And we did a movie called Killing Season and it's a fight between Bob and John. So now I haven't seen John in years, and it was now I see him every day for a few months on this movie set. It was great. It was a great reunion. Fantastic. Yes.
That's amazing.
Awesome. You see, it was meant to be. You know?
Yes.
And sometimes you see how people waste years not talking to each other.
Oh, I know.
For nothing.
For nothing.
And then you even forget why.
I know.
You know?
That's
you forget
crazy.
Why you stopped talking to them.
So, De Niro, what is, can I just ask, I'm sure everyone wants to know, what is your favorite stunt and what is the most dangerous stunt you've ever done?
You know, that's funny. We were just talking about that the other night.
Everybody, that's your first question people ask, right?
Well, it's one of the things that you know, when I was a police officer, you get stereotyped immediately. You go to a party and the first thing they want to talk about is the ticket they just got.
Yeah.
So I used to not tell people after a while that I was a police officer. I'd be introduced and I'd say, oh yeah, I have a karate school. And the conversation
Much
went in
more
a different direction.
Yeah.
And what happens, the same thing with stunt work.
I know. I'm sorry.
No.
A cliche.
No. It's what people want to know. I mean, you as a stand-up, I want to know what's your favorite, what's your favorite joke, right?
Totally right.
Yeah, exactly. And you probably don't want to tell
me. No, not at all. I need shots of vodka before I'm doing that.
Well, you know, I just got the Guinness World Book of Records for Blues Brothers 2000. We did the biggest car sequence in history.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
That's
interesting. And it's in a movie that hardly anybody saw because it was the second Blues Brothers. But it involved 54 cars doing things that now people look at it and they think it's CGI. But it's real. And if people want to see it, they go on YouTube and just look it up. And it's just amazing to watch for a minute and a half watching this.
That's long.
It's an amazing thing. And we did it all in a day and a half, which is even more amazing. But that's probably my favorite stunt. My favorite movie that I worked on was Batman Begins.
Ooh.
I worked with Chris Nolan on five movies. Three of them were the Batman movies. Had a little acting part in one of them.
Which one? What'd you do?
Batman Begins, chasing the Batmobile. I was always chasing the Batmobile.
All right.
If you look at the first police car, that's Rick chasing the Batmobile.
All right.
In three movies. And crashing. And
you're
just,
always the first one.
Exactly. But my favorite movie was the one that's out now called Hands of Stone.
Yes.
And I spent 4.5 months down in Panama teaching Edgar Ramirez how to box. Teaching him how to look like Roberto Duran, choreographing all the fights, second unit directing, and learning to love the Panamanian people and the culture down there. It was such a great experience. And my wife, Donna, came down with me.
And
we got engaged there.
You got some hats.
It was really a fun, hard-working time.
Yeah.
But this is cool. I mean, because the thing is, look, you get to travel to places. You get to be with famous people. You get to do things that are like adrenaline rush every time. I mean, to chase the Batmobile.
Yeah,
how can
I know.
You find a more fun job than that in the world?
Yeah. So true. What's the picture in the book of Dustin Hoffman? What was that one?
I doubled Dustin on Meet the Fockers.
Oh, I thought that was him. I mean, when he's doing. So what was the stunt that he did?
Well, we had a couple of them. The first one was me throwing a kick. And it's funny because Bob was on that movie.
That's right.
And I had to throw a kick past Bob's face. And then kick Ben Stiller in the face doing a martial arts kick. And I kicked sand in Bob's face during the rehearsal, and I almost freaked out because, you know, I had this impression of Bob. I had worked with him on Casino and Heat before, but I didn't know how he was going to react to that. And he just looked at me with that face he makes with the mouth turned
down. The De Niro face.
He said, no, that's impressive. That's impressive. So that was good. But Dustin had to also do a fall over a table.
That's what
I said,
a glass table or something?
Yeah. And there's a story about that in the book.
I was reading it. Yeah, that's very funny.
Yeah, where I kind of screwed up the stunt the first time I tried. And,
whoa.
I'll let your readers read up on that. But it was a funny time. And Dustin's amazing.
Yeah, he seems like a really cool guy.
He's a method actor, but he'll tell jokes right up to the time they say action.
Interesting. So he's not like too method.
Not too method. And he would come by us and say, Rick and Doug, who is the stunt coordinator, come on up into the motorhome. You guys ever had a proper cappuccino?
Oh, wow.
And I'm going, oh, my God, Dustin Hoffman. Doug, he's asking us up into the motorhome.
That is
to
so
have
cool.
A cappuccino. And so we go up into the motorhome, and he says, let me show you how to make the froth. And I don't know anything about a cappuccino. Coffee, maybe, nothing about. And so he says, this is your oasis, guys. Just pretend we're on a ship in the ocean.
Oh, my God.
Anything you want, just ask for it. And I'm saying to myself, this is Dustin
yes.
Hoffman making me a cappuccino, telling me I'm on a boat in the ocean. It was fantastic.
Is he one of your favorite ones you've worked with?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because he's fun, I bet.
He's fun. He likes to joke.
Yeah, yeah.
I work with him also on Hook, and he and Robin Williams would get into these joke fests. Robin would be up there hanging in a harness on a wire, and Dustin would be down there in the Captain Hook outfit.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a comedian like you, right. So I can't even remember the lines, but they would go on for 10 minutes talking
really?
About, oh, you have the Academy Award, Robin would say.
Oh,
and Dustin would say something about this and that, and then Robin would go off and say, how come he doesn't have any balls at that Academy? And they would go back, and the crew would be dying down there.
Of course,
Spielberg
Robin
would be
Williams.
Laughing, right?
Oh,
and
God.
We would get nothing done for 10 minutes, but you would just want to get a video camera and
sure.
capture this.
Nowadays,
moment.
Everyone would have their phones out.
Exactly.
Isn't that sick? They'd all have their phones out.
Wow. So for those of you wanting to find out more about Rick and his life and his adventures, the book is called A Life at Risk. Rick Avery, of course. You guys can find it on Amazon. I see it's up there. And you know what? Another thing I should ask, I never asked the listeners, is give reviews to the book. You know, I mean, if you read it, you know, even if you just heard about it now, I think that qualifies them for a good review.
I do. And they can, and lie if you want. Just give it 5 stars. And, you know, just say it was fantastic.
It
but
really.
You can also, if you want an autographed copy, if you go to rickaverybook.com,
okay.
And it's the same price. I'll go ahead and personalize it for you.
Wow, how cool is that? What's the website again?
RickAveryBook.com.
There you go, you see? So a very experienced stuntman. And then you passed on the genes to your sons too,
right? I did.
What do they do? What are they doing these days?
Well, my youngest son, Michael, he is doing a lot of triathlete things for the Diabetes Association because he's a type 1 diabetic since he was 8 years old.
Wow.
He's also was a stuntman since the time he was 3.
Wow. Didn't let stop him.
It didn't stop him. And so, you know, he retired from stunts when he was 28, but at 28 he'd already had 25 years of doing this.
Wow.
My son Brian is extremely successful in the business. He works so much and works for a lot of people, so he's taken it one step further, and
wow.
You know, he's got a lot more years ahead of him.
Right. And there's so much about you we don't know yet, and you guys are going to have to peel this like an onion because, like, for one, I know you like flying helicopters and stuff, right?
Well, you know, it's funny. Yesterday I was flying charters all day, and most people, when they get in the helicopter, they'll say, oh, this, how long have you been flying? And
yeah,
I'll say
right.
36 years. And then they'll, but they don't know I've been doing stunts for 35
right.
years. And so it's nonsensical, isn't it?
Yeah.
How could you have
yeah,
done
man and.
600 movies and television shows and then you've been flying for, no, I don't believe you.
Right.
And that's, it is. It's kind of unbelievable because I don't really, I guess they, what's the old slogan? If you're happy doing what you're doing, having fun, you never work a day in
yeah,
your life.
Yeah, never work a day in your
right.
life.
Yeah, so I get tired, but I never get tired of what I'm doing. And
yeah.
Donna forces me to take a day off during the week because otherwise I would just...
You'd collapse or something,
I
right?
would, yeah, I would just continue having fun.
Right.
And fortunately, you know, the helicopter work has taken me to another level. I fought fires for a couple of years
wow.
doing that, and I do a lot of movie production and camera work with it as well, and it translates well with the stunt work and second unit directing. So.
Yeah,
wow.
absolutely. And last week we had a photographer, an aerial photographer, and he's also suspended from helicopters taking pictures
yes.
and videos and stuff. So a lot of that stuff and a lot of men that are really... I mean, you're really taking it the next step because, like, look, I flew, I took flying lessons on a Cessna and all that, but put me on a helicopter, I would die of fear, especially
really?
At this point in my life.
Really?
But that's probably because I don't understand how it operates, right?
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
Helicopters
because,
are very safe.
Yeah.
People think
really.
That if you were to lose an engine, which is an extremely rare occurrence, extremely,
right.
The helicopter will glide.
Right.
And it's easier to actually land in an emergency than an airplane
That's
is.
So
Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah, and it and if you've never been up in one, I can't recommend it enough. It is glorious. It's like a magic carpet ride.
Right.
You're low to the ground. It's slow. There's tour companies all over L.A. It's a great thing to do on Valentine's Day with your loved one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You take off vertically and land. I mean, how cool is that?
It is.
Yeah, you just suspend it in
the
air.
And the headphones make you look cool. I think they make you look cool.
Look at what you said.
Because I got them on now. For sure, man.
Yeah, nobody sees the helmet you're wearing, too, really.
Right. That's for other things. The rocking. Wait, have you ever gotten really injured? That's the other question I bet everyone asks.
You know, yeah, I think that with a life like I have, you're going to get injured here and there. Fortunately, I'm still in really good shape.
Yeah.
I've had a couple of three knee surgeries, a rotator cuff surgery in my shoulder, a broken ankle, broken wrist.
But nothing
those
like,
type of things, yeah. Nothing major. But I have friends that have are on the second, third artificial hip.
Wow.
Oh my
so
God.
There are stuntmen that weren't so
usually
fortunate.
It's so hard on the body.
Yeah. I think also that some people in the industry don't work on their body. I've been working out since I was 16.
He's very fit, everyone, if you can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very fit.
Yeah. Because they don't want
yeah.
you to just fall out of the tree. They want you to climb it first. So.
Yeah, right?
And when and then, you know, I used to compete in the martial arts for years, and then I started boxing at a later stage of life. And USA Boxing has... they're amateur world championships where you can box somebody within 10 years and 10 pounds.
Mm.
So 3 years ago, I started competing. I won the national title in my weight division.
Congratulations.
And then last year, I won the world title, and this year, I defended it.
Wow.
So boxing keeps me in really good shape.
Really good shape. And right. you're also a seventh degree black belt in Kenpo?
Kenpo, yes.
Okay, so tell us what that is. I thought it was Kino. I couldn't figure this out. I didn't know what it was.
I only wish I could be seventh yeah, degree Kino. Don't we
too.
All?
Yeah.
Just win one $5 bet. Yeah. Yeah, I started the martial arts when I was in the service. And when I got out in 1969, I started training. And so I guess I've been doing it for a long time. And Kenpo is a Chinese fighting style. It's based on Kung Fu. And it translates to Chuan Fa, which is kind of boxing, Chinese
wow.
boxing. But essentially, a lot of hand techniques. Ed Parker brought it to the United States. He's the grandmaster of our style.
Wow.
I got a chance to train with him and Joe Lewis and a
wow.
number of the top
And you met
guys.
Muhammad Ali, I saw.
I did meet Muhammad Ali. I got that. That's my favorite picture in my book.
Of
is,
course.
Is with him.
Oh
and
my
the
God.
Most wonderful, kindest man you'd ever want to meet.
That's amazing, right? And he came across as so arrogant and stuff when he was like...
I thought he came across as so charming.
You think
yeah,
when he was like...
He's like, I'm the best. I mean,
yeah.
there's something alpha male about it that was very... I
that's
thought he was...
True,
and how
right?
he was playful.
So almost, yeah, it was
just charming, yeah. yeah.
You know, you look at the time, though, and here is... He was a black... Black man.
Yes, exactly.
When that wasn't acceptable
no,
to do. You're a braggart. You're black. How dare you take a stand and now you're changing your name
right.
and you're becoming a Muslim. At the time, it was very, very controversial.
And you're going against Vietnam War. I mean, yeah,
yeah
absolutely.
Exactly.
Huge.
But now you look at it and he's a hero.
Absolutely. And you look, we always talk about the Colin Kaepernick situation where he's taking a knee. And I'm like, what did Ali do when he said, well, the Vietnam have never done anything to me, so I'm not going.
Right.
That's taking a knee. And it's very interesting that he probably was so ahead of his time.
Yeah. yeah.
Even now they're burning the jerseys, but I'm saying back then it was just like out of control.
Yeah. He's just... Muhammad's just the sweetest. And you know, most professional boxers that you meet are like that.
Sweet.
They're sweet. They're kind. They're nice. They're not violent like you would think they are.
Right.
They,
what do you think attracts them to boxing then?
Man, I wish I could answer that. Because
really?
I go down and I spar down here at Superb Boxing, you know, 2-3 days a week. And I'm getting hit in the head and hit in the body. And I'm going, what? And I come home. My wife looks at me and she says, she's not even going to look at me. She says, I don't know. You're beyond insane. Why do you
it
do this?
It is a
this?
Weird thing of just two men fighting each other. It's
it
very
makes
it's very
no
primitive.
Sense.
It's very primitive. Like we talk about right. the apes just like fighting each other.
Yeah. It's something that I love so much. And it's not the violent aspect. It that's why they call it the sweet science. It's trying to score on your opponent. It's and if you compete, you really have to push yourself mentally. Do you see?
Yes.
For me to be able to win the world title, I not only had to get in better shape than everybody else in the world in my mind physically, but it's a mind game.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you have to train yourself every single day to do it.
And you wonder when he does all
this, right? I
know.
Like, what are you?
You know why he gets up early. He accomplishes so much more. By the time we get up, he's driven a couple.
I told you, my wife gets me up early. It's all her fault.
Yeah, there you go. But I gotta tell you, Rick. I mean, look, you're in your later years in life. Okay, you're not a spring chicken. You're not like 30 years old. You know, I mean, the thing is, and that's what's mind-boggling
mm-hmm.
to me.
I agree.
You know, I see people that sit on their ass all day at home doing nothing, and you've accomplished so much, and you still are. I mean, boxing.
Defending it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, boxing, flying helicopters, doing stunts, meeting Robert
Directing,
De Niro.
Directing, being on the radio.
writing a book, having time for your family. You're an amazing man. I mean, do you ever look at yourself and go... And tap yourself on the shoulder?
Occasionally, but not very often. I think my wife and I say it's a problem with having self-validation. I grew up as a very shy, skinny boy. The girls didn't pay attention
to
me.
That really transformed you, it seems like.
It did. I mean, the thread in the book talks mostly about that, how I had to overcome and how I first wrestled in high school, and I was beaten and embarrassed, and my coach took me aside, embarrassed me in front of the whole team.
Wow.
See, that stuck with him his whole life.
That's a good motivator. Yeah. There you go.
And he said, never quit. Never. Now, a coach, when he does that sometimes, you'll quit.
Yeah.
And a lot of people will.
They'll push you to the
end. Other people will all of a sudden now get an attitude and say, okay, I'm never going to quit. And
right.
I guess I took it to an extreme.
Yeah, he never quit.
But my philosophy of life is, we know nothing about what comes after this. You know, whatever your religion happens to be, if you just believe, well, you become a light in the universe. You know, if you go to heaven, depending on whatever your thoughts are. But we only get one shot here. And if I could live to 300, I would keep doing all this because there's just too much to do here that gives you joy.
That's mm-hmm. true.
One
that's
life
true,
to live.
You know, and that's the thing. I mean, I look at my life and compared to yours, it's so empty.
But not really, because he's probably impressed that you own and host a radio show.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but still, I mean, the motivation that he has, I mean, to stay in shape physically,
totally.
Mentally, you know, to do stunts. You know, I mean, to fly helicopters. I mean, for crying out loud, I told you. I'm busy taking edibles and flying on planes and getting totally anxiety.
What's interesting, though,
and reading my ass off. But that's about it.
But it's interesting because I bet you anything that's down to that risk gene.
Yes, it is.
Because if you don't have that risk gene, and I do not have that risk gene,
but
you don't have the need.
You must have it.
Oh, for the comedy.
There is no way that you would ever get me to stand up and just tell a joke that I'd rehearsed.
Isn't that funny? But you could be on fire, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I don't understand that because what you do is so courageous and... The audience is watching you so intimately.
Strangers.
You're there in a light.
It's very, but you can't see them, which is even scarier, but I just pretend I'm in the shower.
And it's instant, like, you know, if you're in a movie, you don't see the response of the audience.
Totally. It's just you and silence. It's like the lowest part of the world.
But isn't it amazing how diverse people are, you know? I mean, look at the things that scare you, which to her, it's like probably it scares her a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
But she does it because she wants to.
But you live off
voluntarily.
That.
Yeah.
It's the best 6 minutes of my day.
Right.
But the whole day leading up to it, I'm dreading it.
Yes.
And it's the best 6 minutes of my day.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's
right?
Everybody
that's
who performs in some way, you dread it. And, and you want to walk away from it and say, it's easier for me to just.
Totally.
And do you look at the people that are just having a common day and you want to be them?
Yo, every day. I think if only you wanted to be a veterinarian. And so I wouldn't have a lot of, like, drama. I'd just be a doctor or something. Like, what if I were an accountant?
Yes.
I could just live my life and have coffee. But I need this shit where I need to get on there and get crazy scared.
And I don't believe in the adrenaline junkie portion of it because I'm sure that you get all of the satisfaction when you're up there. When they're laughing, that's your adrenaline,
100%.
Correct? You go nuts and 100%. You live for
that. I shake after, right after.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Same thing with me. It's great, but I don't like the adrenaline. Mm-mm. I don't personally like it. What I like is the accomplishment afterward.
Oh,
the calm, the feeling of, wow, that was cool.
That's cool.
People come over, say hi, thank you.
That's what I like.
Isn't that
great? Yeah, that's the best, yeah.
It's like after sex.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's almost...
Now we're back to the porn.
It's back to the porn, but it's almost like... It is a... when you say, when you're telling jokes to strangers, there's something so validating that then the stranger says to you, like, you made my night, or, you know, like, that's pretty crazy that that's a job.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
So it's catching on fire.
I mean, but you got to look. I mean, I'm going to your website, okay? Everybody go to rickaverybook.com, okay? You can just see on the cover of the book. I mean, you're suspended upside down from a helicopter, for crying out loud.
Actually, I can't take credit for that. Is a gentleman from England.
Oh, so you're flying the helicopter?
I'm flying the helicopter.
Oh, that's even cooler.
But,
yeah.
But wow, I mean, but that's still, I mean, it's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, I have hung underneath helicopters.
I'm sure.
Just
I'm
not
sure
in that particular
have.
Instance,
I mean,
but.
It's just, yeah, it's a foregone conclusion that
yeah.
you have.
Damn.
We don't even doubt that for a second.
Were you always bored as a kid?
No.
So
no.
It wasn't like you need to keep doing the next thing. You were just...
Yeah, and you know, it's become really a curse. I mean, my wife and I are the same way. If we sit down for more than 10 minutes, we feel guilty.
Yeah.
And my wife...
I get that.
In her own... If I could just plug her for a second, she's the woman who was hanging from the helicopter in True Lies.
Yes. No! The Jamie Lee Curtis?
That's her.
No!
My wife has more iconic stunts than I
do. No!
She was on the raft on Indiana Jones coming off the cliff.
My God!
She's an icon in the industry, but she's also an Emmy Award winner. She's nonstop. She's a business manager now. I mean, she's a management for talent.
Wow.
And
right.
She has a couple of boxers that she manages.
Wow.
Now, let me ask you, are there like enough female stunt people or stunt women in the industry?
Now, yes.
Now there are
enough.
Back when my wife was doing it, there weren't very many.
There weren't very many
that were really talented.
So that leads to my question. Was there ever a time when men did stunts for women?
Yes.
Really?
I was just thinking that.
I had to do it once. Twice, actually. I was very uncomfortable doing it. There's nothing like getting dressed up like a woman.
What movie was it, did you say?
One of them was a commercial. The other one was John Q, a Denzel Washington movie. So the opening sequence has a woman driving the car that's actually me.
Wow.
And it's not because I didn't give the job to a lady. She just couldn't finish it.
Yeah.
So we were stuck in the middle
of... You put the dress on and you keep going.
Yeah, it was. I really, really felt bad about that. But yeah, guys like Jimmy Halty and smaller gentlemen over the years have... But now that's changed.
Yeah, there's
now
some great stunt
women.
Now
it's frowned
upon. Yeah.
We don't like, people of that are non-color... doubling people of color.
Right, right.
It's not really acceptable anymore, and it's really frowned on for a man to double a woman. And it should be, because there's a lot of talent out there.
So there's a lot of talented women
Absolutely.
Now, yeah. So there's no reason to do it.
Absolutely.
Wow, amazing. Rick Avery, the book is A Life at Risk. And, I mean, just go to the website. You see, I mean, you've pretty much taken pictures with all the who's who in Hollywood.
Yeah, I'm you a know. Hammer up, hammer
Always,
up.
But did you meet Donna doing stunts?
Yes, we met. Actually, she didn't like me very much either, she said. But we met on the set of Cannonball 2.
Oh, man.
And there's a picture of the stunt crew, and it's kind of a cool picture because it has old legends and new, you know. And she's sitting behind me, and little do we know, 35 years later,
no
we'd be married.
Way.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you hadn't been in touch all that time?
No. We would bump into each other here and there. We worked on some shows we didn't even know we worked on the same show. I hired her once on a movie called Identity. There's the picture.
Okay,
yeah.
Here's the picture, guys. Yeah, this is crazy.
So
a bunch of people. That's so crazy.
Yeah.
There's a story once of a guy who went to Disneyland at 6, and in the video he crosses his future wife, who was also 6 at the time.
Really?
They just happened to be at Disneyland and it's in their home videos.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Whoa.
You never know, people.
You never know, man.
Yeah.
But if you guys want a book full of excitement and adventures and everything, I mean, there's like... endless stories. And it's amazing because, you know what, Rick, if let's say you were sitting here at an interview and you hadn't written a book yet, I would say you obviously have a few books in you. So you finally brought one to light, and that's an amazing thing.
The problem with it was people told me for years you should write a book just because my life was eclectic. And so I started 15 years ago and I got 50 pages done. I met a man named Tom Bleeker who's done a lot of professional writing, and he did a lot of interviews and helped me get the book out. But literally the day before I put the book out, I was so fed up hearing about Rick Avery. I didn't ever want to hear my name again. I'd already done the therapy, right? Yeah, Every night. I've lived through the life. I've taken care of my problems, the regrets
are
fixed.
Why do I have to do this again?
And I couldn't push the send button. And my wife said, you got to do it. And I said, no, I don't want the book to come out now. I did what I wanted to do.
Wow.
So I pushed the button, and there it is.
There it is, no matter
and
what.
And everything is out there.
Yeah, it's out there.
Wow,
yeah.
There you go. But you know what? There is no privacy today anyway. It might as well be you telling your story than somebody else.
Yeah,
right?
It's better. I mean, you make the money. But honestly, you know how you can never find a gift for your dad or brother? Not that this is a sexist comment, which it was. But this is a cool gift for like a dude in your life that you've already got the razor and the dob kit for a million times. Get him this book.
Exactly. I mean, anybody should get this book because it's a story of, like you said, of overcoming adversity, growing, transforming yourself.
And some badass celebrities.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I envy your life.
Oh,
I really
you.
Do, you know? I mean, that's amazing. You've done so much. You've got so much to tell. I mean, if I wrote a book, it'd be pretty much, okay, so the other day I read this book and...
Wait a minute. You immigrated from Israel at 16 to Vegas and then spent the 70s. Come
That's
on.
That's a book right
That's
there.
That's a book
Come
right
on.
There.
Yeah, but you know...
Are you kidding me? It should just be called, like, Glitter.
And I got to tell you, I mean, and I've told this a million times on the show, but I referred to taking flying lessons. I was living in Vegas at the time, so I took off from North Las Vegas Airport, which was small, and I flew over like Charleston Mountain and stuff, and I must have been at about 10,000-12,000 feet, which was life-saving for me because I was doing stalls, because that's what they teach you how to do, right? That was my first solo, and suddenly I overstall the thing and I go into a spin and I go towards the earth vertically. And had he not shown me before how to get out of a spin, I would have been dead.
Wow.
And somehow still, I mean, you lose everything. You lose a sense of direction,
panic,
of orientation. You're just facing the earth turning and you go, what am I doing now? And the wheel doesn't work, the ailerons don't work, and none of this works, you know. And then I remembered and I pulled out of it and the G forces on my head and everything. And now when I look back, I'm thinking that was like a near-death experience.
Yeah,
and I mean, I was almost dead then.
Yeah.
So maybe now I kind of fear planes. But I got to tell you, I still did cross-country after that, solo, and sort of like overflew my destination. And that was like in the 80s. So, no, in the 90s, there was no GPS yet.
Wow.
Yes, that's right.
I was flying with a map.
With a map on your leg.
Yes.
What's a map?
Sam, tell me what your feelings of Vegas are nowadays.
I'm not crazy about Vegas at all.
It doesn't have a personality.
No,
really
no.
Anymore,
it's,
does
very...
it's the guy at the bar you don't want to be next to. You know what I mean? It's no personality all show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Very true.
It's that guy, the douche.
Yeah.
Although, like, I like Vegas because I won once, but... it is a douchey guy with too much flash and not a lot of heart.
And
you
know, a lot of cologne.
Totally Acqua di Gio, overly poured on.
Yeah.
Or cool water.
Well, Rick, so much to talk about. I mean, we have to invite you back anytime.
Yes.
I would love to.
Okay, there's so much more. And after we read the book, we can bring up a lot more topics.
Yes.
And everybody, please go out, get A Life at Risk, Rick Avery. You can get it either at rickaverybook.com and you'll get an autographed copy. Or you can go to Amazon and all the other places and find it, which is amazing. And you have it in paper and also probably electronically, digitally.
Yes, it's on Kindle as well.
There you go. And please give good reviews. I mean, if Rick doesn't deserve a good review, I don't know who does.
Seriously.
Really, you know?
He's got a halo on his head.
Yeah. Well, at least you're a light for me to look up to.
Oh,
so that's
thank
amazing.
You, Sam.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
So, Rick, send our love to your family.
I will.
Sure they're all
tell
listening.
Donna that True Lies thing is I'm going to tell all of my friends.
Yeah, tell her directly. She's probably
listening.
Oh,
she's listening.
Donna.
Yeah.
She wore that cool dress.
Oh, yeah. She's
the
hot.
Black dress.
My wife's hot.
Yeah, she's hot and she's a great person, too,
wow.
I remember.
Yes.
So, next time, maybe she'll come in too with
she'll
you.
She'll
love
to.
That.
Awesome. Okay, everybody. Thank you all for listening.
Thank
you, Tori. And we'll see everybody tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.